Mid-Missouri's only local afternoon talk show, The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
More discussion about overturning the smoking ban in Columbia when we open up the lines for your calls at 6:06 tonight. And now we welcome to our microphones the Director of Energy and Global Warming Policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's also chairman of the Cooler Heads Coalition, which is a group of over two dozen nonprofit groups that question global warming alarmism. And I suspect he would count these titles as honors. He was one of several people named in a field guide to climate criminals by Greenpeace in 2004, and Rolling Stone magazine in November 2005 named him one of six misleaders on global warming. Myron E. Bell, welcome to the Eagle 93.9.
Thanks for having me, Derek.
Some interesting titles you've collected in your career here.
Yeah, well, we're known by our enemies, right?
Yeah. So the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Control, issued its summary report last Friday, and you have described it as a propaganda document. Why?
Well, you know, people say that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is sort of the authoritative source of information on climate change. And in one sense, that's true. Every 5 or 6 years, they produce three massive volumes, each one about 1,000 pages, that cover every aspect of climate change science and everything that has been learned in the previous 5 or 6 years and compared to what was known previously. And so it is pretty authoritative, although it has some problems. But what was released this past week in Paris is just the summary. And the summary, instead of being of just the Working Group 1, which is about 1,000 pages, the Working Group 1 report won't be published until May or June. The summary is about 20 pages, and it's not written by the scientists who write the report. It's written by the governments that belong to the IPCC with, you know, technical and drafting assistance from the bureaucracy of the IPCC. And so it's designed to be a propaganda document. It's designed to support the agenda of the Kyoto Global Warming Treaty, and that's what it does. And yet it's portrayed by the major media as, you know, this is what the scientists say. And, of course, you know, the media, you know, a typical reporter for a major newspaper has time to look at a 20-page document, but he doesn't really have time to look at a 1,000-page report that will come out in 5 or 6 months.
Which governments are part of this IPCC?
Well, most of the government, you know, there's this thing called the Rio Treaty, which was negotiated in 1992 at the Rio Earth Summit, or the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. And most of the governments of the world ratified that treaty. It's called it's a climate treaty, and it says we're going to stop harmful climate change through voluntary measures, and that was 1992. And the IPCC was created, and most of the members of the governments that have ratified the treaty, and that's most of the world, also belong to the IPCC, not all of them. And so the Kyoto Treaty followed as the Kyoto Treaty is a sort of an addition to a protocol to the underlying Rio Treaty, and that sets mandatory limits on greenhouse gas emissions, primarily carbon dioxide from burning coal, oil, and natural gas. So it's most of the major governments of the world and a lot of the minor ones.
So in advance of the official report then, the governments who sponsor the scientists who take part in the IPCC have issued this summary. What did the summary say, and what do you make of their report?
Well, it was sold, the talking points that were sold to the reporters were that we're now more certain than ever that the warming trend we're currently in is caused by human beings, primarily by burning coal, oil, and natural gas. And therefore, the scientific basis for cutting those emissions, using less coal, oil, and natural gas, is firmer than ever. Now, if you look at the details, they've actually lowered their estimates for example, what the computer models predict future temperatures will be like. Now, I don't put much store in that because I don't think computer models can predict what future temperatures will be like, and particularly not out to 2100. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could do it for 2010. But even there, you know, the models have a pretty poor track record of predicting the next 5 years or the next 10 years. The second thing is they've lowered some of the estimates for some of the impacts of global warming. For instance, they've really lowered the top end estimate for sea level rise, which wasn't all that high anyway. You know, Al Gore talks about 20 feet. The best, the sort of the medium guess of the previous report in 2001 was not 20 feet, it was 20 inches by 2100, which would be a slight increase over the rate in the 19th and the 20th century of sea level rise. But now the top end had been around 35 inches, and now they've lowered that to about 23, I think. I'm converting from the metric system, so you'll excuse me if I get it slightly wrong. And so now the top end is around 23 inches, and so that would put the medium guess, the middle guess, lower than 20 inches. So we're getting back to about the same rate, maybe a little bit faster of sea level rise than in the 20th century. But, you know, this is something that's been going on since the end of the last ice age 12,000 years ago. The seas have been rising as the ice slowly melts. So it's not some catastrophic impact like Al Gore would want you to believe.
Myron Ebell is our guest on the Eagle 93.9. He's Director of Energy and Global Warming Policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. So why hasn't the response from the major media been, hey, this is great news?
Well, it's funny because some of the kind of more active of the political activist scientists and some of the environmental groups have been complaining that this report is not alarmist enough, and they're starting to describe it as, well, yeah, because it represents a consensus, it has to be very conservative, it can't really tell you the truth, it has to underestimate everything. So they're not actually happy with it, or some of them aren't. And it's a very odd thing we're getting into now, which is, for a long time, scientists who thought that these reports from the United Nations were overly alarmist, and you know, there are a number of scientists who just don't buy the whole project of cutting our emissions and don't think that climate change is a very serious problem, don't think there is very much climate change. Those scientists have been marginalized for years as skeptics, that these people are outside of the consensus that is part of this United Nations report, all the many hundreds of scientists that work on these 3,000 pages of report. Well, now the environmentalists are saying, and some scientists are saying, well, this consensus isn't good enough. We've got to go beyond the consensus. You know, I mean, because it doesn't support people like Al Gore. It doesn't support people like Senator Barbara Boxer in the Senate. I don't know exactly where I'm going with this, but you can see that they're now trying to say, well, this is the establishment, and the establishment is trying to fool the public by underestimating the dangers of climate change.
Well, and what we're looking at then is the use of science for politics. We're talking with Myron Ebell, Director of Energy and Global Warming Policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We'll talk about the reasons why scientists and science is now being used to drive public policy instead of just research stuff. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is The Drive. You're listening to the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Think responsibly. This is The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Casting our net searching far and wide as we look for Columbia's model citizen. It's a fashion show to benefit the Thompson Center for Autism and Neurodevelopmental Disorders. That's coming up next week, Saturday, the 17th, at the Holiday Inn Executive Center. You'll find complete details on the event at theeagle939.com. We welcome back to our microphones a man named Villain of the Month by the Clean Air Trust in March of 2001, Myron Ebell, Director of Energy and Global Warming Policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Myron, if the science doesn't support the conclusions of the activists who argue that we need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in order to stop the warming of the planet, if the science doesn't support it, then there must be a political agenda at work here. What is that political agenda?
Different people have different motives, but I think that and some of them are very sincere, But I think the underlying driver is that the environmental movement really hates energy use. And you, if you go back to the beginnings of the environmental movement in the late 60s and early 70s, you'll see that what they were really concentrating on was the idea that we're running out of everything, the limits to growth report, the population bomb. There were numerous reports and books at the time that we had to stop using so much because we were running out of it, and particularly energy. And it's, of course, by the 1980s, it was clear that we weren't running out of anything. And in fact, everything is more abundant now the more we use of it, because of course human beings are clever and technology advances and we figure out how to use less use energy and natural resources more efficiently. We figure out how to get them from deeper underground at less cost and you know, all of these things, progress. And so, the global warming issue when it arose in the late 80s fit in very well with the need to find some reason to force people to stop using so much energy.
To what end? I mean, they just want us to go back to living the way our ancestors did in the 19th century?
Well, I think underlying it is the belief that human beings have too much control over nature, and that's largely through our use of modern energy. And if we have less energy, we won't be able to interfere as much with nature. And if you look at some of the leading theorists of the environmental movement, these themes develop fairly clearly in most of them.
Sort of a weird Gaia worship sort of thing?
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know where all these things come from. Some of it is just simple pantheism. Some of it is the belief, is a sort of Gnostic, a kind of reverse Gnostic belief, Gnosticism being a Christian heresy, Gnosticism is the belief that we're these pure spirits that somehow landed on Earth and which was created by the bad God, and you know, it's everything material is evil and we've got to escape. And but this is the opposite. It's that we're the evil, and it's the good God that created the Earth, and it's this spiritual being called man that's bad. I mean, if you go back to all of these things, they seem, in the end, they seem kind of silly, but to the sort of fundamental, what's moving people. But you know, if you look back at the big kind of anti-human environmentalists, going back to John Muir in the 19th century, basically they believe that anything that human beings touch goes bad. When things are left alone, nature is beautiful and peaceful and wonderful. And as soon as we get involved, it somehow goes rotten. So
yeah, Krakatoa was probably our fault too. Mount Pinatubo, Mount St. Helens, all of that was probably our fault.
Was natural, so that was okay.
Oh, yeah. Myra Nebel is our guest on the Eagle 93.9, director of the Energy and Global Warming Policy at Competitive Enterprise Institute. Myra, with just a couple minutes left, what is the status of the Kyoto Protocols, the Kyoto Treaty?
Well, it was negotiated in 1997 by the Clinton administration, signed by President Clinton, but he never sent it to the Senate to ratify it. And when President Bush took over in 2001, he decided he wouldn't send it to the Senate. And, of course, that doesn't really matter because the Senate wouldn't ratify it anyway, even if the president sent it. Now, in Europe, they have ratified it, and it's in force, and it commits Europe and Canada, which has ratified it, and Japan, to reduce their emissions to below 1990 levels by 2008 to 2012. And 1990 is the baseline year for emissions, and the interesting thing is that although emissions in Europe went down in 1991 and 92 because of the collapse of East Germany and its reunification with Germany and several other political events, since 1997, when Kyoto was negotiated in Japan, emissions in Europe have been going up faster than in the United States, even though they have signed and ratified this treaty, which promises that they will reduce their emissions, but they've been going up faster.
Interesting, but yet it's still our fault.
It's our fault, yeah.
Myron, I appreciate the information. I'd like to talk with you again because this is a debate that's not going to go away anytime soon.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Very good. Myron Ebell, Director of Energy and Global Warming Policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. I'm Derek Gilbert. Coming up, we're going to open up the phone lines. We normally would have Laura Mansfield on the Mansfield Report on Tuesday afternoons. She got called away. Special project will not be able to join us tonight. That gives us an hour to talk. Global warming, certainly that's a topic on the table. Also, the smoking ban in Colombia. There's a group trying to overturn it already. All that and anything else you care to bring to the table. Open lines next hour on The Drive. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.